coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast at the 3M Open. Would you believe it? A guy named Tony Finau won again. We get to the weirdness in Minnesota. We got more LIV defectors to talk about, an LPGA major, a senior major, and a whole lot more in the world of golf. We're tuned into some baseball memories and a Disney experience unlike any other. And this week's guest, we have Matt Curtis from Golf in Your State on all things road trip, van life, and some really cool experiences in the world of golf. Plus, we're recapping trips and a coffee stunner when we always end with food, all of it brought to you by our friends at Desert Fox Golf, makers of the Phone Caddy. We love the Phone Caddy, and we also love to hear news that they're going to be expanding their product line in a big way. So check desertfoxgolfout.com for everything you love with the variety of the Phone Caddies that keep your phone safe and where it needs to be seen on the golf course, and their new and upcoming products as well, too, as something for the cigar aficionados. So check out desertfoxgolf.com. Our promo code's Course of Life to save 10% off anything on the website. Promo code Course of Life to save 10% off at desertfoxgolf.com.
Hello, interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life, part of the Morning Read Podcast Network. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf, Swing Strong, and D3 Golf. I'm Michael Hayes, Alex. And Alex, they were in Minnesota this past week for the 3M Open. It was a super light field.
Yes.
And probably the highest-ranked player, I think, out there, right? Wasn't Tony Finau the highest-ranked player in the field,
was,
maybe?
He was. And he was the betting favorite this past week, which set off a lot of alarms in the golf betting world, because that just didn't seem right, and that didn't settle with a lot of people. But alas, look where we sit now.
Yeah, I don't know so much if he won, as Scott Piercy just completely fell apart and put up a 5-over 76 on the final day to lose it. Finau, you know, he did well still. He did a shot of 67. He won clear by three shots there. So he gets to notch his third PGA Tour victory, his first of the season since last year's Northern Trust.
He's kind of on fire, I'd say, in relation to how long his drought had been before. I mean, we had the running joke with Sam Harrop, the songwriter, who wrote, "When will Tony Finau win again?" Yeah. You know, a couple of years ago. And since then, he's got two more wins under his belt. So I think we have to kind of slowly remove that monkey off of his shoulder, because he's had that vibe going for him a while as a winless guy, but he's starting to collect them in some strange spots. So shout out to Tony Finau.
I'm going to call Tony Finau, and don't hate me for this, the new Kevin Na, in the sense that we're just going to put him down for one win a year. He's going to show up on a couple leaderboards at majors, but he's never going to win. And he's just going to be there. We're going to like him.
What you can't knock is his consistency, and it shows in his earnings in recent years on tour. He's always there. He puts himself in a great opportunity to win a lot. I think it's something like close to 25% of his recent tournaments he's finished in the top 10. So the opportunities have been there, and he finally cashed in on one.
That's true. Let's talk about our picks that were out there. I was a little busy in Orlando. We'll talk about that a little later, which is why I didn't have any picks for this week. But you had Sungjae Im in your picks, and Just three short shots shy there.
Yeah, which was kind of strange because he was kind of mostly out of it all day on Sunday, but it was a good pick for about 2.5 rounds after opening nicely in Minnesota last week. Overall, my team picks on runyourpool.com, which I post weekly, were really good. All six of my guys, Mike, finished inside the top 30 or 35. So pretty good week for the roster picks, but no winner, alas. We're running out of shots here on the PGA Tour season to get another win or two. But follow along on Twitter if you're interested in our picks weekly on Wednesday nights for the tour. I'm at Course of Life 1 and you're at MWRINC.
We also had, once again, a senior major championship and a women's major championship on the same weekend. This is the second time this year that this has happened.
Interesting.
Let's start at Glen Eagles, where we had the Senior Open. That's the Senior British Open for those Americans who don't know what the Open is actually called. And a birdie from Darren Clark beats Patrick Harrington.
Yeah, it's, who just won the senior U.S. Open, if you remember, a few weeks ago.
That's right.
Remember, Patrick Harrington's gone a little Bryson-esque. He's like ramped up the swing speed. The swing's longer. He's hitting bombs right now. So he's a threat like every week right now on the senior circuit. But alas, the jolly old lad, Darren Clark, who had previously won a British Open, comes back after all these years and gets a senior Open as well. Nice little capper on his career, I'd say.
Yeah, you know, not that it's over. You know, he's only 53. He's got a couple more years to maybe win another major here on the senior circuit. Interesting thing I do want to talk about, though, was Bernhard Langer. Did you see that Bernhard Langer made a very human mistake at Glen Eagles?
No, I did not. Bernhard Langer is human? I thought he was a robot.
He did a double chip. He hit the ball twice on a chip.
Classic.
It was like, whoa.
I do that in my backyard, definitely on accident every once in a while. So it's good to see the pros do it as well.
Yeah, especially from someone as robotic as him. Also, across the pond, a little south of Glen Eagles, we had the Amundi Evian Championship. And, you know, Brooke Henderson takes now her second major championship. After winning the 2016 KPMG PGA, she now took home the Evian Championship, douched in champagne, as is fitting in France, of course. And there you go. She's having one hell of a season out there right now.
She is, yeah. Shout out to Canada. I love her swing, just love her approach to the game. So it's always cool to see her get back into the winner's circle. She's got just a great attitude, infectious personality, and yeah, it was fun to check in on the Evian. Always beautiful sights and scenery in France. A couple of funny moments, which we'll shout out. The woman picking up Nelly Korda's ball, just thinking it was a souvenir in the crowd. I saw you appreciated that.
That was just the Ranger overalls that went up to her. It was just like, what the hell are you doing? What are you doing?
That was great. And the other one, for people who may not have seen, you need to follow Hope Barnett, our friend and past guest on the show. She was there. Besides, I believe the 18th green, and a parachuter came flying in during the winning ceremony. And of course, the chute landed right next to Hope and literally gobbled her up. It was quite a scene if you don't follow her on Instagram. So some funny, awkward moments at the Evian for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, we've talked about how there seems to be a really quick turnaround in the PGA Tour between majors with these one every month sort of thing that we've had for quite a number of years now. But the LPGA now gets a week in Scotland, and then they go straight to Muirfield for the AIG Women's Open. They have 2 weeks now in between majors.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
I've never loved this part of the schedule when we're trying to kind of squeeze everything in. And then we've got the separate LPGA playoff focus, like later, awkwardly in the fall. I never really liked the format of the schedule when you get to this time of the year for the LPGA. Doesn't allow them to really put their best foot forward when you're scrunching all these majors. But I mean, hopefully there's some sort of change or just a little bit of stretching in the schedule in years to come.
Yeah, it'd be nice to get a little more breathing room in between everything. That said, for travel purposes for the LPGA, to see them having 4 weeks in a row in Europe makes a lot of sense for these players. So
yes, no, I can understand that. Yeah.
Let's also give a shout out to a past guest, one of the OGs, I feel like, from back in the day. That's Taylor Montgomery. We had him on a number of years ago at this point. And as we said, I think back when he was on the podcast and he started playing really well after, good things come to those that come on this podcast. And Taylor Montgomery has now secured his PGA Tour card.
Yes, and that's like 100,000,000% verified, by the way, because remember, he did unfortunately have that horrible experience where he finished number 26 in the top 25, get their cards. So that was not great last year, but we have officially 100,000,000% verified. He's locked it up and secured enough money to be granted the card at the end of the Korn Ferry season. So yes, Taylor Montgomery officially tour bound. Shout out to Taylor. We caught up with him briefly at US Open week at Brookline and originally had him on in 2020. So check the archives for those interviews, but a great personality. Great guy that's been really working hard at it, especially the last few years. And we've seen the development and now we get to see him on tour regularly.
Yeah. It'll be exciting. Yeah. We'll put a dollar down on him on his first official PGA Tour card carrying start. Why not?
Absolutely. That'll be fun. Love it.
Let's talk LIV golf because, oh man.
Yep, live for your guy. It's time, Mike. Shout out to Hitler.
Don't. I'm sorry. Do not bastardize my state's motto for the Live Golf Tour. Do not take New Hampshire's state motto and use it that way.
Sorry, I'm just living, Mike. Just let me live, okay?
I'm more okay with that, maybe. They're at a certain former president's golf course in New Jersey.
Perfect timing, yeah, right? Just there's nothing going on in the world of the news at all for a Trump course to be the host of a Live event. It's so fitting, isn't it?
Yeah, let's just add that to all the moral issues we have with Live Golf. Just say what they're gonna go play.
Let's get the rumors. Let's get the rumors.
Yeah. So last week the Henrik Stenson looked like was gonna go. It was kind of a done deal, and it was by the time the episode came out. Charles Howell also going, as is Jason Kokrak. We kind of knew Kokrak was gonna go forever.
We did. That
was
kinda, yeah, those are pretty expected, I would say.
Mm-hmm. And we already talked about Henrik Stenson, and I already vented my way through the stupid decision I think it is for him to give up his Ryder Cup captaincy in order to go do this.
That team Europe, they're losing a lot of soldiers right now. If you think
Ryder Cup in general, a lot of guys on the Ryder Cup in general are going away. So, but let's talk about the $400 million rumor of Hideki Matsuyama.
What? Yeah. What? And this is one of those deals where we are speaking on unverified stuff that could be verified this week or this month or maybe later this fall post FedEx Cup is what I'm reading. But this is completely unverified, but coming from one of those accounts who's also got the last 10 live rumors correct. So it's one of those deals where it's a completely illegitimate source that seems to have a mole inside of what's really going on. And the reason why that number is so exacerbated for a guy like Hideki Matsuyama, it's not necessarily because Hideki is not a top 5 or 10 player in the world at the moment, but what he is, Mike, is he's a global superstar. And the effect that he has and the popularity he has in Japan and with Asian golf is astronomical. I see it firsthand at the match play. There are more media members following Hideki than there are any other player on any given day. So that just gives you kind of a glimpse into the star power he possesses and why that crazy dollar figure is out there.
That's what's maybe most surprising about golf in the United States and maybe the U.S. having at least before Live Golf came around, the U.S. being the home of professional golf is that the Asian markets eat it up so much more than we do here in the U.S.
They do. Yeah. And that's how robustly popular he is. They potentially command that. Some are saying, I don't know, 300, 350. I don't care. It's an absurdly ridiculous amount of money that could potentially be on the table for Hideki. So we'll see what comes of that.
You know, I will see what he does. It'll be interesting to see what he does. And then, of course, there's big news in the broadcast booth for Live Golf, and that is that David Faraday, who has been underutilized at NBC since CBS cut him loose a couple years ago, has decided to take his unique brand of analysis over to Live Golf. This is not really that surprising to me. This makes Live Golf more interesting to watch if they use Faraday the right way. What would make this even better, of course, is if the rumors are true and Gary McCord were to go as well, because McCord and Faraday together, I don't care if there's anyone else out there calling the golf, just put McCord and Faraday together in the 18th tower and let them go to town.
Right. And here's the thing. We're you're tugging at our heartstrings of the golf on CBS that we used to watch 50 and 20 years ago. So you're hitting on our formative golf years right now. So if you repair Faraday and McCord in the booth,
and
PGA Tour, I'm trying to hold on right now, but this Live Tour, they're doing things to me right now that are having me thinking about watching a lot more. That's all I'm saying.
What happens if Charles Barkley goes to town as well?
That's another one that's getting floated around too.
He pretty much said, I'm going to make a decision this week. Be ready for the fallout. Now, that sounds like he's going to Live Golf to me.
What? I mean, that's quite the super booth. I mean, I no offense to Jerry Foltz, but I don't know how much time he's going to get on the air now if all these guys get added here in the coming weeks. That would send tremors, because the thing about Charles Barkley is, you know, he's not a golf announcer at heart. He's got the experience through the matches, but he's primarily a basketball personality. So we're now transcending to personalities from other sports and bringing them into Live Golf. That's what's going to really set off some real shockwaves, is seeing a media personality like that move if he does.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. And it sounds like maybe Barkley is negotiating with his current home with TNT. Maybe he's trying to make it so he can still do basketball, but go and do golf for live, and that's what he's trying to work out. If I'm TNT,
you know what that means to me? That means live golf on TNT coming soon. That's what that's what I'm saying. Oh,
that'll be interesting for sure. We'll keep an eye on it. You know, did you see the other rumors too? The Live Golf is trying to maybe put together their own little women's tour as well. So you might have like the women tee off in the morning and then the men tee off in the afternoon, and you get a combo event like that.
This is that unbelievable spot where, you know, we originally have this moral argument about the origin of where money's coming from. But however, if they are implementing these potentially wonderful changes that we have been calling for in the game and presenting these ideas that we have begged and pleaded for, it puts us at quite a divide because they're doing all the things that we want, just not really from the origin we'd like them to come.
And you know what'd be interesting is I feel like, you know, the PGA Tour pros, I have trouble seeing some of these guys jump ship because they're already making plenty of money on tour and they're just jumping for this automatic paycheck. The LPGA does not pay anywhere close to the PGA Tour.
Yeah, so you just offer a rank level LPGA anywhere over $1 million, and that's surpassing their annual earnings by a mile. So makes you think of what offers could be on the table for the ladies soon.
It's gonna be interesting to see what happens. We'll keep talking about it here.
No shortage of headlines, right? Every week,
none whatsoever. Let's look ahead to the Rocket Mortgage Classic in Detroit. This is one of those tournaments. We're just maybe like 2 weeks away right now, 3 weeks away from the start of the FedEx Cup. So maybe it's a tune-up event for some guys.
That's the theme, Mike, right now. I wrote the runyourpool.com article if you want to check out the full preview there. But the theme is we're running out of time right now. It's desperation mode for guys who have not had the season that they predicted or thought or hoped. You know, rookies, young players that we know on tour that are desperate in that 150, 175, 200 position. There's only the last couple cracks this week and next week to make it happen for them.
And you know what's really interesting? Let's tie this into Live Golf that we just talked about, is that after this week, after Bedminster, you may have other guys announce they're going to play in the next Live Golf tournament that is after the end of the FedEx Cup. And the PGA Tour has not suspended guys until after they've played in the Live event.
Right.
So what is the PGA Tour going to do if a couple guys say they're going to go to Live, but they qualify for the FedEx Cup?
Yeah, they're double banking it, Mike. They're cashing the Live check, and then they're going to the playoffs and cashing that one a few weeks later.
So what is the PGA Tour going to do? There's all these guys in that kind of bottom. There's a couple guys down there in the bottom of the FedEx Cup rankings that could get moved out. So all of a sudden that bubble gets all the more interesting to look at because there's guys who may play, may not play. We don't know.
Fair enough. So maybe 126 and 127 have shot after all. So
yeah,
that's definitely a storyline to watch. Headliners in the field, Patrick Cantlay headlining, Will Zalatoris, Cam Young, fresh off the second place finish at the Open, back in action. Defending champion is Cam Davis. Pretty wide open field beyond those few guys. Finau's back in action as well, too. So those are your core top names. I will not be predicting a back-to-back winning week for Tony Finau.
If he does, that's amazing. Then
we're having a whole other weird conversation about Tony Finau being the hottest golfer in the world. But I'm not ready for that.
We'll have three different players this year, which will be like, this is the hottest player in the world right now.
What was Xander Schauffele at one point? Not long ago,
like 2 weeks ago. But we'll have a full picks up on Twitter, and of course, you'll have your Run Your Pool article up there as well. Let's switch over to Tuned In, where we share what we're tuning into outside of the world of sports. It was a vacation week for me, Alex. I went to the happiest place on earth. I went to Disney.
Yes, there were so many positive emotions from your content this past week. You know, just. It was. It just exuded a lot of positivity and good childhood vibes. And it sounded like you were just living the kid life for pretty much the entire week.
The last time I went to Disney was 2005. So it's been a long time. Been a long time since I've been to Disney. We did Hollywood Studios. Let me just say, like, Galaxy's Edge and the Rise of the Resistance ride is just phenomenal.
Talk us through the Star Wars piece, because I saw a lot of cool photos from there.
So the land. So if I'm comparing Star Wars Galaxy's Edge land to, let's say, another highly immersive land in another Orlando theme park, and that, of course, would be Harry Potter.
Okay.
If we were to compare Harry Potter world to Star Wars world, or whatever they're actually called, Harry Potter wins hands down to me in terms of immersiveness and what they've done with the land. It's just kind of crazy what they did there. But the Rise of the Resistance ride at Disney was spectacular. It was one of the most fun rides I've ever been on.
Nice.
And I don't want to spoil it for anyone, but you got to go early. You know, we rope dropped. We got there early. We were staying on site, so we got early access. We got in the park 30 minutes early, so we only waited like maybe 30 minutes for Rise of the Resistance. But a little later, that wait was over an hour and a half. So you got to be ready for that.
Good planning by you guys. I saw some good execution, and we'll get to the meals a little later as well, too. We saw some good execution there as well.
Yeah, we will indeed. But I highly encourage anyone to go to Disney, because this is a whole lot of fun. I mean,
it looked like you were just having just a jolly old time there.
Splash Mountain, Space Mountain, Haunted Mansion. It's fantastic. Yeah, everything's
good
fantastic.
Memories. Good memories on Space Mountain. Love that. My memories were baseball related, actually. Some throwback Red Sox and Yankees memories coming to fruition here in 2022. Obviously, we don't need to talk about what's going on currently on the field, because that's not obviously really relevant.
You don't want to talk about how the Red Sox are like 20 games behind right now or something like that?
Yeah, or how we gave up a quadrillion runs last Friday night to the Blue Jays.
That was a fun game to watch. Let me tell you. That was hilarious.
We're going to look down memory lane here for both teams. I'll give you a tip of the cap on the Yankee side. I've been watching the Jeter documentary on ESPN. That's about two episodes in right now. Fantastic watch on his career and how he came up through the minor leagues. We're getting into the late 90s, just when he's beginning to thrive. But that's a must watch. And I also got to see Big Poppy's Hall of Fame speech on the other side. So it was cool to see him finally get inducted. First DH to go in first ballot. So shout out to Big Poppy for getting into Cooperstown.
You know, I am a big fan of Big Poppy. Yes, I'm a Yankees fan, but Big Poppy was the heart and soul of the Red Sox for so many years. And as I know I've said before, and I will say it again, I had the kind of luck and honor of being at Fenway for the first game after the bombing.
Yes.
And to hear Poppy take that mic.
This is our effing city, yes.
This is our effing city. It's the only time, one of only two times I rooted for the Red Sox in my Yankee years.
I forget that. That's you need to tell that story more, by the way. That is like one of your pinnacle sports moments, by the way. Just
it really was.
You gotta bring that out more often.
That is of you know, I've been to a lot of Yankee games. I've been to a good handful of Red Sox games, been to the Bobcats playing in Tampa for the NCAA hockey championship. I don't like to talk about that story. But to be there for that game with my friend who had run in the marathon, that was just an incredible experience.
Very cool memories indeed. Love that.
All right, let's get into this week's guest. Alex, we've got a photographer and a documentary creator that takes van life to the fullest. And van life to me is just like, I just don't understand van life. I really don't.
And Matt Cardis, who runs the Golf in Your State accountant brand, does indeed take it to the fullest. And he is living quite an adventurous life. And he always has. We get into his background, which is fascinating. What he's doing on the road, some of his favorite stops in golf, and just some really unique tie-ins to the game. A fascinating guest coming your way.
And we'll have that conversation with Matt in just a moment. But first, let's talk about the official on-course betting app of the Course of Life. And that, of course, is D3, dollar, dollar, dollar. It's just the best way so that if you're in a van jumping around to different states, you can play with your friends no matter where they are for money. Because this app works everywhere in the U.S. and it doesn't matter if who you're playing against is playing with you or not.
Yeah, it's cool. You can do both local and remote matches. I had a little quick COVID break from on-course life, but I'm heading back out there this week for sure. I've got a couple friends who have challenged me, so we're setting up challenges for our next round. I encourage you to challenge me as well. Find myself or Michael on the D3 Golf app. Our promo code COL when you download the app. Get on there, find us, send us a message, pick the course. Our handicaps and scores match up to each other, so it decides exactly who gets the right amount of strokes where, and it creates the match odds for you. It does it all, and it even pays you out in the end. So check out the D3 Golf app. Definitely the way that we bet on the golf course. Next up on the tee, we have a professional photographer based out of Jackson Hole, Wyoming. You know him as the Golf Nomad from the Golf in Your State brand and account. And episode one of his Detour documentary is available now. It's Matt Cardis joining us on The Course of Life. Matt, how are you?
Really well, Alex. Thanks for having me on today.
Definitely. I know it's a whirlwind adventure for you just to get on this evening. As always, never boring in the day of golf in your state's life. I want to talk about something that you mentioned right off the top about your entire lifestyle. Obviously, you love snowboarding in Jackson Hole and kind of the basis for how you got there as well, too. You talk about a really neat idea of being life rich, and I think that really shines through in your content. Tell me just kind of about everything that got you to golf in your state and what that idea means to you.
Sure. I mean, right out of college, I kind of recognized that, you know, it working a 50-week-a-year job just wasn't for me, right? I think a lot of people work towards retirement where, you know, I really had the mindset of I want to enjoy my life and do what I love to do every single day. And, you know, out of college, I found myself living in Jackson Hole, and it's still my home base today. And, you know, I love the outdoors. I love recreation. I'm a snowboarder, fly fisherman, mountain bike, you name it, I do it. And, yeah. You know, really that kind of lifestyle in the mountains is what, you know, helped me formulate what is today Golf in Your State. You know, I am a professional photographer in golf, but, you know, aside from photographing golf courses and players on golf courses, you know, a lot of what attracts people to what I do is the travel side of it, right? The more kind of, you know, lifestyle on the road and being this nomad that I am.
Very cool. Yeah. So let's talk about van life specifically. I'm curious, you obviously knew you wanted to have travel in your life. When's the first time maybe that van life became a real idea and that you could actually hit the road in the way you do?
You know, when I first started this business back in 2016, I lived out of a pop-up tent on top of my car for 2 years.
I saw that, yeah.
A hard shell pop-up tent. And been in the van about a little over 3 years now. And, you know, it was something right from the bat. I knew what I wanted to work towards. And, you know, there's a next rendition as well. But, you know, when I first started, living in a tent on top of my car was less than ideal, especially as a photographer. Like, being in a van, at least I have, you know, electricity and, you know, somewhat of a workspace, so to speak. You know, my van's my everything. It's my home. It's my workspace. It's my studio. It's the clubhouse. It's the mobile clubhouse.
Definitely.
So, you know, there was a lot of advantages in getting into a setup like that with my lifestyle on the road. And I mean, you can just imagine, you know, I think back to when I first started this out of the car and just how much of a nightmare it was, right? Like the van, I'm still a big dude in a small space in the van. But living out of your car, like with a packed vehicle, and, you know, it was
that's tight quarters.
It's challenges all the time.
Definitely. So I guess what was the toughest adjustment to that full-time van life, albeit water, electricity, resources, directions? What would you have to adjust to the most?
Yeah. I mean, it's a combination of all of it, right? I'm a one-man show. So, you know, there's so many things that go into, you know, running a business while living on the road full time. And, you know, it's a lot of time management. And yeah, I mean, you nailed kind of the basic life necessities on the head there. I mean, water, electricity, you know, navigation, time, driving, there's so much. There really is so much. Like, wait, I can always tell, like, when my travel has got me burnt out, right? Like, I can understand it. I can acknowledge my own self being enough to be like, okay, I'm just getting back on the road. So I can picture, like, I can see myself being like invigorated and fresh and ready to go. And, you know, you'll see me 3 months down the road and I will have done things every single day for 3 months. And by the time that time comes, I'm like, okay, I need a little bit of a break now, right?
Yeah, that is understandable. I don't blame you. Yeah, the schedule is busy. But let's talk about some stops on the journey as well, too. There were a bunch of really cool golf landmarks I wanted to highlight. But let's talk a little bit about the starting point. And you mentioned it in your content. Again, Matt Cardis with Golf in Your State. Let's talk about Pasatiempo. Of course, I know by name. I've never been to. But I understand it's got a lot of history with you, and it was a unique starting point for you as well.
It was actually, I picked the day one of picking up the tent. I actually picked up the pop-up tent in Santa Cruz, California. So I drove from Jackson, Wyoming to Santa Cruz to pick it up. And immediately, as soon as I got out of the car, I was like, I got to go camp tonight. So I went and found the closest camps that I could. And, you know, like I had planned this all around kind of the Santa Cruz area and knew Paso Tiempo was there. And, you know, it was a slower time of year. So it wasn't like I needed a tea time or anything like that. And, you know, that was back when I was just like really enjoying this whole thing right at the very beginning. Yeah. And so I ended up going to Paso Tiempo for the day. Such a special place. Like if you love golf course history, like, you know, it's the resting place of Alistair McKenzie. Like it's so special. And, you know, to start off with something like that, that was like, okay, I see where I'm like, my thought process was already formulating on like what this could become and what I could do with it just based on the places that I went.
Yeah, you dropped that nugget too. So Alistair McKenzie designed Augusta National, and he buried it. One of his ashes buried at Paso Tiempo. Is that right?
Yeah, his ashes are spread on the 16th green at Paso Tiempo. There's a little bench and kind of sitting area there. You know, even if I'm passing through Santa Cruz, you know, I've done it many times where even if I'm not playing, I'll take the time to just go up there. You know, I'm pretty fortunate that, you know, I know how to get there on kind of like the back roads and the neighborhood streets there. Yeah. And literally I'll just go sit on the bench for a little bit to pay my respects just because it's that special of a place.
I love that. Cool. Well, let's talk about some kind of golf trip locations that you've been to. First one, obviously, being Bandon. It people know it now by one name, but it's several courses out there in the Pacific Northwest. You've taken, it looks like, several trips there. I guess I got to ask, what's your favorite course at Bandon and your favorite experience there?
You know, it's so hard. In the first episode of Detour, I allude to trails being my favorite, but literally it changed. My answer changes every day. All the courses there are so good, you can't lose. But I mean, if I had to choose one, I would probably pick trails just because it's just so different from the landscape there. And I think that's one of the reasons it sticks out to me is because the other courses there are all somewhat similar, right? I mean, coastal, you got views of the water and so forth. Where trails is like tucked in the trees and it's different for the property, which to me makes it stand out a little bit more. But I mean, you can't lose if you're going to Bandon at any one of the courses. They're all good.
Nice. And the other trip spot I wanted to mention, which you put an unbelievably unique spin on as only you could, was your camp out at Pinehurst for the My Island Green segment on YouTube. I love that video. I know that's not a spot for everybody, but tell me about the little gem you found for that episode specifically.
Yeah. So during kind of the onset of the pandemic, I isolated at Pinehurst for 45 days. And, you know, I'm really fortunate that I have a very strong relationship with the resort. And, you know, when I started talking about this, I was like, I really, truly want to get away from everybody, right? Like the resort was still in operation. It wasn't that busy there, but
yeah.
For the most part, I wanted to be by myself and at least from like the camping perspective, be truly isolated where I didn't have, you know, if I was in the parking lot of Pinehurst, I'd constantly have people coming up to the van and so forth. And Tom Pashley, thank you very much. Suggested that I go and camp out at the Pit, which is a former golf course in Pinehurst, which has now been abandoned and purchased by the resort. And there's future plans to build the next golf course out there.
Nice.
Cool. So yeah, it's an old abandoned golf course, not far from the resort itself. And you know, I was fortunate that Talamore Resort as well during that time frame was like, we have a condo for you. Come down here. So I had a condo plus I was camping out at the Pit. So it was like, I'd go out to the Pit and then I'd go back to the condo to shower and clean up and do my laundry. And it worked out really great. I mean, I was there for 45 days. So
yeah, that's a pretty good way to spend that time in our lives. Really neat, neat quarantine story there. And the other trip I want to mention, which is actually something I just saw recently, is I want to talk about the time you spent at Sweetens Cove. Not just a little time, not one round, but the 100-hole hike specifically. Before I ask how you held up, what all goes into this event specifically at Sweetens? And I understand there's many more opportunities for people to do 100-hole hikes as well.
You know, my relationship with Sweetens Cove, again, is very, very strong. I quarantined there. That was actually where I was before I went out to Pinehurst. I was at Sweetens Cove for 17 days.
Oh, wow.
And the staff there has obviously become family, Matt, Rob, Cole, the whole crew. And, you know, the Youth on Course 100-hole hike kind of presented itself through Matt Adamski, the general manager at Sweetens Cove. with my friend Roger Steele, Youth on Course, that decided to do this year's hike at Sweetens, and the GM was like, we got to get Curtis involved. So they reached out to me. Obviously, you know, I'll bend over backwards with whatever Dan wants from me. Like, you know, you jump. So, obviously jumped right on board. It was absolutely fantastic. Like there's something, you know, coming from Jackson Hole, I've done a lot of these kind of endurance events, right? Like I've run half marathons and I've done 24-hour mountain bike races. I've supported 24-hour wow. mountain bike races. So like I knew what I was getting into, but this was, it was brutal. Like there was literally a point at like hole 60 that I was concerned about if I was going to finish or even make it, right?
Yeah. I was wondering how each round progressed. I'm thinking in my head, maybe, you know, 18, I'd be fine. 36, I'd feel the tiredness. And then after that, I really just have no idea. So what is that kind of sensation in your body when you're on hole 60, 70, 80, or 90?
Well, you have to think about it as the fact is Chattanooga, Tennessee, you know, June, hot, humid. We started at 5 a.m. So really like the first 50 holes were a breeze. And I say that because it was morning temperatures. It was excitement. It was, you know, adrenaline. It was cloud cover. There was no sun. It was cool. Nice. And then as soon as the sun popped, like I want to say it was like 10, 11 o'clock, that's when it got a lot tougher. Because the heat immediately picked up, like that's when it really, you know, it was right around 63 that I was like, hey, you know, this is brutal. You know, I'm really fortunate that I had the team that I did.
Yeah, who were playing with that those days?
Yeah, so my team was Kyle Walton, Jeremy Freeman, Golf Ball Gallery, my friend Jacob Galladay, Jesus of Golf.
Oh, nice, yeah.
And then Matt Considine from New Golf Club. I was fortunate that, you know, we all know each other really well and we're friends. And, you know, through my experience doing endurance events in the past, like, you know, I was very aware of everything, myself, how I was feeling, my body, my mental state, but not only myself, everyone else, right? I was constantly like surveying the group and, you know, it was cool that I truly believe that all of us were doing that within the group and our communication was really good. And like, you know, there was a point where around that mark where I was like, I need a break. Like I really need to just go sit in the AC for 5 minutes and I'll be like, I just need a refresh. Right. Cause in between rounds, we were like running back to change our shirt or change our socks or whatever you like get provisions or whatever you wanted to do. And, but we weren't taking like a proper break. And I was like, I need just like 5-10 minutes in the AC, just like to get my body temp down and I'll be good. Nice. And we did that once. And I could see like it like pick us up just because that little thing is, you know, it was important to all of us, whether everyone wanted to acknowledge it or not, but it's just little things like that, that can, you know, there was people that were getting blisters and, you know, there's so many little things that can make that day a lot harder. So it's just like, you know, having the awareness going into it to be prepared. And then, you know, day of like acknowledging, okay, I'm starting to get a blister. I should address it now before it becomes, you know, bad.
Yeah. A lot of body preparedness needed for an endurance day like that. But by holes, what the final nine or coming down the stretch, what time did you guys eventually finish 100 holes?
We ended up finishing just under 13 hours. So we were right before 6 p.m. we finished and we started at 5 a.m.
Love that. So cool. What a journey indeed. And that's all for
walking, you want all my details on it? My group ended up walking 26 miles.
Oh, you got the numbers. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. You want all of them? So
yeah. Give me a few numbers here. There was some pro who shot like 40 something under par. I don't know if it was with you guys.
He went 44 under for 100 holes.
Nuts.
11 hole loops. He went 44 under. Insane. So yeah, we walked 100 holes in one day, 12 hours and 53 minutes. We walked 26 miles. I personally took 427 golf shots. I had an average score of 38.5 per nine. I wore 4 shirts. I wore 4 pairs of socks. I wore 1 pair of shoes. And I raised over $17,000 for Youth on Course. So
freaking awesome. And nice scoring as well, too.
It was like one of those, you know, if you've never done something like that, pushing yourself to the limits for a good cause is one of the most rewarding things I've ever done.
I love that. Yeah.
Of course, I look forward to doing it again next year.
For sure. Yeah. Fantastic organization that helps access to the game for the youth. So we absolutely support Youth on Course as well. I'm looking forward to seeing and hearing about future 100 hole hikes. I think I might need to get myself involved in one as well. It sounds like
there's a bunch of other locations coming up for the remainder of the year. And then looking to 2023, I'm thinking I might try and do a couple of them next year is what I'm thinking.
Nice. Good stuff. Again, we're joined by Golf in Your State. It's Matt Curtis. The Detour documentary is out now. And one thing I noticed is we got a mutual friend in Tanner B, because you had the awesome opportunity to debut Detour at the Mammoth Film Festival. Tell me about that experience for yourself. You know, the premiere, red carpet, people checking out the finished product and what that was like for you.
Man, it was wild. I hope you didn't get a hold of that footage from the red carpet, because it was embarrassing.
I did not, fortunately. We won't break it out from the archives either.
I had never really done a red carpet event like that where I was actually like presenting something, right? I've been to red carpet events where I was just a guest and kind of walking through, but like this was, it was so much fun. Like, first of all, thanks to Tanner for, you know, even presenting the opportunity. When he had mentioned to me about, you know, wanting me to submit something for the festival, you know, I was a little nervous. I mean, I was a little anxious, but it also like really inspired me to try and put my best foot forward and put something in front of him that, you know, he thought was, you know, something good that people would want to watch. Like his experience in Hollywood and the industry, like, you know, I take his opinion very seriously. So, you know, when he presented the opportunity, I took it as a compliment, just one that he even thought I had the skill to, you know, create something that he would want to present at his festival. No less, you know, go there in person and have the experience and be part of the whole thing. It was an absolutely fantastic weekend. And then to walk away with, you know, the best action sports shorts category, like I would have never thought that in my wildest dreams that I would be presenting at my first film festival and walking away with award. And
very cool.
You know, I just want to clarify that Tanner was not the judge of my category. He had nothing to do with it and all that, but it was, it was a wild experience. It really was.
Very cool. Hope to see more at future film festivals from your content as well too. Let's get to some quick shot questions, before we wrap up here, with Matt Curtis. Real quick, favorite golf course to photograph.
Ooh, it's so hard. There's so many good golf courses. One thing I found in my travels is there is good golf courses everywhere. Visually beautiful golf courses that I like to photograph. You know, it's so hard.
Or maybe a highlight from a recent course you've been doing.
I mean, there's so many. Rams Hill Golf Club in Southern California, Gamble Sands in Washington, Chambers Bay. You know, there's so many. There's so many. It's impossible to answer that question.
One's easier to answer for you. Longest consecutive hours driven on the road for you?
You know, I try not to do any more than like 6-8 hours these days, just because I know that if I do 10-12, I'll be worked the next day. You know, back in the early stages, there was some times where I did those long pushes. But, you know, I've realized that what I'd much rather do is, it's not about the destination. The journey is what happens between point A and point B, right?
Yeah.
That's what really the story is all about. And you have to make time and enjoy kind of the drive in order to, you know, create those opportunities to make something truly special out of your journey. So,
love that. Let's tease maybe upcoming content. I don't know what the status is with Detour, or where are we at with maybe an episode 2, or what else can people look forward to seeing in terms of YouTube video content coming your way?
Yeah, we got 4 other episodes of Detour coming. They are in the works. They are coming. I've kind of prioritized some stuff I had in the immediate future kind of over getting those done on the backside. But there is 4 more episodes to come. Lots of really cool content. I mean, I was on the road with Detour for 6 months. Literally episode 1 came from 1 week of 6 months.
Jesus.
So there is a ton of footage, and you know, I'm spending my time to do it right. I want to really put together kind of some compelling stories based on like what's transpired in different places. And it takes time to do that. So there is 4 more coming. Some other stuff I got coming up. I mean, I got a bunch of stuff coming up this fall as far as like production side things. You know, Adidas has been obviously a great partner of mine, and we got a bunch of stuff coming up this year, which is pretty fantastic. I was at the US Open with them. I was at their sales meeting just a couple of weeks ago as well, down in Carlsbad. But we got some production stuff coming up at the end of the year, which I'm really excited about. I got a couple trips coming up with Electric Golf, which I'm really excited about too. One of them is out of the country. You know, I got, I just picked up another brand partner, Cobalt Rangefinders, and we're talking about doing some trip stuff together at the end of this year and this fall as well. You know, right now I'm currently crossing the country over to New York. I'm going to spend a little bit of time on the East Coast. I got some family stuff coming up this week, next week. And then after that, I'm going to bounce around a little bit in the Northeast to kind of pick up some loose ends on some stuff that I've been working on.
Nice. Very cool. I grew up in the Boston area myself, so I look forward to seeing what you find in New England, because I know you'll find the gems.
Such a fun time at the US Open this year. It was such a blast.
Yeah, Boston. Thoughts on Brookline, the country club, real quick.
Boston is a great city. If you've never visited Boston, it is definitely worth a trip.
Definitely. It's a great spot. Let's always end with food here on our conversation. So we're going to ask a couple food questions. I'll do the roughing it question before we get to the luxury first. What's your go-to, like over the campfire dinner meal to make?
Yeah, grilled cheese.
Yes. All right. And now the luxury question is the 19th hole question.
Grilled cheese? Oh, man. It is so good.
I don't think I've ever tried it, to be honest. Oh,
yeah. Trust me, go buy the grilled cheese maker for campfire, and it is like fantastic.
And very intriguing. Okay, I like that. And the luxury question I was going to ask is 19th hole. Let's say you get into your favorite clubhouse, maybe it's Sweetens Cove or another great course. What's like your go-to meal and drink order when you get done with the round?
Drink is usually transfusion. Depends on what kind of mood I'm in. I'm a rum guy. Rum's my cocktail of choice, yeah. But golf course, usually a transfusion. You know, I stick pretty simple. I'm usually like a burger or sandwich, something like that.
Fair enough. Love it. Hey, Matt, appreciate you hopping on the Course of Life. Looking forward to more episodes of Detour, all the golf in your state content coming in the future, and keep hitting them straight out there.
Thanks so much for having me on, Alex. I appreciate it. Till next time.
And we're back. Great chat there with Matt in the van all the time. So I understand him going to the campfire grilled cheese. I don't think I've ever had one, but a grilled cheese is just the homiest, comfortingest meal. I know I just made a word up there, but I don't care.
Yeah.
So, to do a campfire grilled cheese.
Yeah. And it's just, I feel like there's something a little bit special and more like unique about the flavor whenever you do something over an open fire. You know, it just feels more primal and raw and real. And I think it elevates the taste experience being out in the wild like that. So I'm definitely going to try that in the near future. It was fascinating to learn about Matt's life and where he's going. Like he said, the Detour documentary episode 1 is on YouTube right now. You can watch it, and many more episodes to come. So be sure to check out all of his content and subscribe to us right now. If you like this conversation or anything else you've heard in the podcast, where you're listening, whatever platform you're on, hit that subscribe button right now and be sure to not miss another episode.
Breaking news, Alex. We're going to do a little childhood throwback for this breaking news. I don't know about you, but one of my favorite things to get off the ice cream truck as a kid was the Choco Taco.
Okay, yes. Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? The waffle cone, shaped like a taco, filled with ice cream and topped with chocolate and nuts. Just fantastic in all accounts.
Yeah, there was a moment in my childhood where I refused to eat like any cafeteria lunch at all. I just despised the act of what they put together there. I had very bougie food taste, I'm guessing, at that age. But the only thing I'd ever eat for lunch was either just a bag of chips or a Choco Taco. Now, then, right. My 30-something-year-old self stomach couldn't take that. But back in fifth grade, that was easy to do. Exactly. And yeah, the Choco Taco was a mainstay for me as a kid.
Well, horrible, horrible, horrible breaking news.
I mean,
they are ending the Choco Taco.
Oh, Jesus.
I mean... I was having an okay day today. Today is now the worst day of my life.
Well, I just don't understand why they need to take something so great like that away. Is it really failing that much in sales and performance? It must
be. I have no idea. Kids these days obviously don't understand the importance of the Choco Taco to their life and need to go out to those frickin' ice cream trucks and get one.
It was one of the few ice cream truck foods you could buy, and you could actually legitimately sell it as a meal. Because you said no, look, it's a taco.
It's a taco. I know. It's just, man, a part of me has died today.
Like, thought as I attend the funeral for the Choco Taco is, I hope the executives at, like, Nabisco Klondike are thinking about this opportunity in the market right now. I think they got to go with some sort of frozen rendition of some iteration of a Choco Taco and call it their
own. You know, I'm surprised Chipotle hasn't, like, put Choco Tacos in their freezer as a dessert. Because that just blends with the brand seamlessly.
We're emailing marketing tomorrow. I love it.
There you go. Let's talk a little football as well. It's my least favorite time of the year, Alex.
Yeah, the time of year where I start to drill you with Giants questions. Your favorite.
It's almost as much as my least favorite time of the year and most meaningless time of the year as is baseball spring training.
Yep, and you know how much I eat up July and August football. I may eat up July and August football more than any other NFL fan in the world. I will, like, rewatch third and fourth quarters of preseason games that don't even involve the Patriots. Like, that's how deranged I am this time of year. I'm so excited the camp's back.
How good are your chances for this season?
It feels like a lot.
Do you have
a
better chance? Is it who's going to have the better season, Patriots or Giants?
I mean, just on straight over under wins, I'll take us. But I'm feeling like another 10-7 and another wild card playoff spot. And I'm just hoping for a bit more of a run instead of a blowout Buffalo Bills loss on the first weekend. So anything more than that really is just kind of like achieving the quota. Mac Jones year two, I'm optimistic about. That's kind of where I stand right now. But just excited for things to get going all around. I'm forecasting maybe 7-10 for the Giants. That's what I'm going to go with right now. What are your thoughts on that record?
I think 7-10, but there's going to be this chance toward the last 3 or 4 weeks of the season for the Giants to back into the playoffs.
Yes, the very last wild card spot. You're that in the hunt team at the very end of the graphic.
Yeah, where it's like, why are the Giants even in this conversation?
Well, mathematically, if they win and five other teams lose out, they could still get in.
Because the NFC East is just going to suck it up again, so there's going to be this opportunity for them.
So alas, the football optimism has begun. I'm just glad to see the pads back on.
Yeah, there you go. Let's hashtag always end with food.
Yes, brought to you by our friends at Swing Strong. Be sure to hydrate and do a whole lot more than just hydrate. It's the world's first electrolyte and energy drink mix made specifically for golfers, or really any athlete or anyone who's working out, just needs electrolytes, vitamins, amino acids, a touch of caffeine. It delivers that. So check out getswingstrong.com, promo code COL, getswingstrong.com. COVID update, my taste buds are finally back. I'm fully recovered.
Good.
Just in time for me to make a little wine country weekend trip, which was a lot of fun. And the highlight, which I know you noticed on the Always End with Food Pod account, was I went to an old-fashioned German bakery.
Yes.
Picked out some wonderful pretzels and danishes to go and had a German pancake, Mike, that was bigger than my head. Those things are absolutely massive. That was my highlight of the week, though.
I love it. Yeah. And of course, again, I was Disney, so I was eating overpriced, not quite as good as you would hope it would be, Disney food.
Yeah, what are they getting for a soda there? What are they getting for fries and a burger there these days?
You can get, so in Galaxy's Edge, in the Star Wars land, it's so immersive. This is one of the really cool things they did, is that the water and soda is in uniquely packaged bottles. So the Coca-Cola is in a squat little round bottle, and it actually has a different language on it. And it's also a dollar more than it is anywhere else in the park.
It's a souvenir. It's a collectible. Exactly. What are you even talking about right now?
Yeah. That said, I mean, the food was okay. It's exactly what you expect from Disney. The best stuff was the sweet stuff. I did get this. I did post it on my Instagram. This black calf. I'm forgetting what it's called. Pretty much a cold brew iced coffee in Galaxy's Edge that then had like a whipped cream cheese layer and then topped with Cocoa Puffs.
That did look phenomenal.
It was pretty good.
Love that.
It woke me up in the morning with all the caffeine and sugar. Let me tell you.
Perfect segue for our final note, Mike. Kentucky quarterback Will Levis going viral this past week. You're not going to believe what this guy puts in his coffee. This dude puts mayonnaise in his coffee. He just stirs it right in like he's a normal person in this world. Have you ever heard of anything so gross in your life?
Is it at least Duke's?
Shout out Duke's Mayo. We'll take the sponsorship for that quote right there. Okay.
That said, that's disgusting.
Yes, it is. So I'm not betting on Kentucky this year if he's quarterback. No. I'm just making that note for later. All right, that's a wrap on this week's Course of Life. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to subscribe if you like what you hear, and we'll be back next week.